Episode 1153, My Strength is My Story with Chelsea Patterson Sobolik, Longing for Motherhood.
Moms, needing a little inspiration and a ray of hope? You've come to the right place. This is the show that you can turn to for just the pick-me-up you need. This is Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. Here's your host, certified life coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist, Christiane Wargo.
Staring at a stop sign, watching people drive.
Happy, happy day. Today is My Strength is My Story series, and I am delighted and thrilled to share with you a conversation and a chat that I had with Chelsea Patterson Sobolik. She is this incredible, tender-hearted, warm, loving woman who has gone through a very, very dark season in her life that women don't ever really want to come to terms with. Infertility. It's a strong, vulnerable discussion. You'll want to stay tuned. For those of you who are brand new to Create Your Now, friends and family of Chelsea's, welcome to our family. I'm so delighted of your presence. If you already haven't had the opportunity, you'll want to head on over to createyournow.com where you can learn more and sign up for the Kisses newsletter, the Keep It Simple strategy, everyday solutions to live, love, and impact. Chelsea really just opens up her heart. And this was a hard conversation for her and I to have. She has been through this recently and was diagnosed at a very, very young age where she is infertile. She can never have her own biological children. And she writes about it in her brand new book, Longing for Motherhood. Now, whether or not you are one who has struggled with miscarriages or has lost a child or know someone who has, or maybe you've been blessed like me to have birthed your own children and you have biological children, this story is for you. I want you to listen with an open heart. Because I know that God has a story within her story. And I promise you, you will be touched. So without further ado, let's welcome in Chelsea Patterson Sobolik, Longing for Motherhood. Hello and welcome to Create Your Now. I am so excited. Today is My Strength is My Story series, and we have with us an extraordinary woman. In fact, she's young enough, she almost could be my daughter. Her name is Chelsea Patterson Sobolik, and she is a wife, and not just of like 1 year or 2 years, she is a brand newlywed. I mean, come on, to her beautiful and handsome husband, Michael. I've seen a few pictures. He is really adorable. And they are living in Washington, D.C. She has worked for the U.S. House of Representatives on issues of child welfare, religious freedom, adoption, and foster care policy. Chelsea has written for the Gospel Coalition, Nine Marks, the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, and the Patheos Evangelical Channel. However, what makes Chelsea shine as bright as a star is that she was adopted as a newborn from Bucharest, Romania, by Mom and Dad Patterson. God has a divine plan for her when they made this beautiful adoption. And now she is the author of her brand new book, Longing for Motherhood, Holding On to Hope in the Midst of Childlessness. Welcome, my friend and sister in Christ. I am so delighted to have you.
Thank you. I am honored to be here.
Well, I have read your book, and it's so hot off the press. I don't even have a hard copy. I just have the PDF. So you've got the hard copy, thank goodness, for that.
Yes, right here.
And look how pretty and bright it is, just as you are. Take us back for a moment to your life. You know, you don't know. You were newborn. You were adopted. But what were the stories that Mom and Dad told you as they discovered you and claimed them as their own?
Yeah. So it is, I'm going to go back even further. It is so funny because my parents got married. They were both 20, 21, so young. And when they got married, neither one of them were Christians. And part of them, they had this little deal before they got married that kids would not be a part of the picture. They didn't want kids. They wanted to live their own life. And so part of their deal before they got married was they wouldn't have kids. And a couple years into marriage, they both became believers, but still children were not on their heart. And they lived in Africa. They've traveled the world. They've had so many adventures. And then they're mid early to mid 30s, they decided, we want to have a family, we want to have children. And they tried, and my mom had several miscarriages. And so they started the domestic adoption process, which was taking so long. And one evening, and they've told me this story so many times, and it's such a sweet one, but one evening they were watching a 2020 documentary. Romania was communist until 89, and right after the dictator was killed, the outside world went in to see the state of the country. And Romania had thousands and thousands and thousands of orphans. And the dictator had put this policy into place. He wanted to significantly grow his population and had put in place this policy that if a woman didn't have a baby by a certain age, she and her family would be taxed. It was called a celibacy tax. And it was a communist country, so no one had money to afford a tax. So all these babies were born and put into institutions. And so my parents were sitting there on a Sunday night watching this documentary, and the Lord impressed on their hearts, go adopt babies from Romania. And so it was 27 years ago, so the adoption process internationally was easier than it is today. And so about 6 weeks later, they were in Romania adopting me, and they adopted a little boy as well. So I always grew up knowing I was adopted. I have four adopted siblings from Russia. So it was just a very common thing to know I was adopted, to know how our family was knit together. The Olympics are always fun because we're each cheering for different countries. But
I bet.
It was, and I think some people think, well, did you reach 18 and then find out you're adopted? And no, I always knew kind of the journey of how my parents created our family. So super special.
It is a super special story and such a beautiful one, because as you believe, we are created in God's image, and you were not left behind. You were not forgotten. God had a divine plan for your life. And he created Mom and Dad Patterson to come and take you. And what I found so extraordinary in reading the story is that they actually were able to meet your biological mother.
Yes, they did, which is such a rare thing for an international adoption. But my birth mom was 19, unwed, teenage mother, had no money, no husband, no resources. So, and I was one of the lucky ones. I was never in an orphanage. I was so young when I was adopted, but my mom got to meet my birth mom, and my adoptive mom met. So such a special, special bond.
Oh, wow. Have you had the opportunity to communicate? Yes.
I haven't. And it's so funny. Everyone feels differently about people that are adopted. I think there's a whole spectrum of how people feel. And some people really care to go find their birth family, find out their roots or whatnot. To me, it's not a big desire of my heart. And again, everyone feels differently, but I always say blood doesn't make family, love does. And I've been loved so well. And so I don't have this identity crisis, if that makes sense, of I don't even know who I am. I know exactly who I am. And again, no offense, or some people do take that route and that's great. But for me, I honestly don't have a need. So,
And you wouldn't even know by your accent, because you grew up here in the States, that to say that you're from Romania, I'm like, I would have no idea.
No one would know. I know. It's so funny.
And you were homeschooled too, correct?
I was. Wow. So my mom homeschooled six children. God bless her. And we all live to tell about it, yes.
Yeah, including her, right?
Including her. She deserves crowns in heaven.
Yes, definitely. Well, I homeschooled for a long time, too.
Oh, my goodness.
So I so can relate to your mother.
Yes, that's incredible.
Yeah, but it's so much fun, and it helps to bond. And I would think that with you all, because your brother, your older sibling, because he was like 11 days older.
He's 11 days older.
Mm-hmm. So you almost grew up like twins.
Exactly.
Together.
Exactly.
And then you had, though, then four other siblings. Did they come all at the same time, or were they sporadic?
Sporadic. So my parents adopted the two of us together, a little boy, a little girl, and then two girls together.
Okay.
So four girls, two boys total.
Wow. Celebrating birth in your household probably was a little bit different than from the typical
Super
household.
Super different. It was so fun, though. And like you said, growing up being homeschooled really did bond us together. And I'm so grateful for it. I'm very, very grateful. So.
Yeah. Oh, what a beautiful story. Okay, well, we're going to dive into your story deeper. But before we get to that, I want to fast forward to right now.
Yes.
What keeps your heart pounding with joy?
That's an excellent question. As we'll talk about a lot more in a bit, I've been through some incredibly dark days and some things I wish I never had to go through. Dark seasons. But I think the thing that keeps me going is that indestructible joy that comes from the Lord. And it's not a happiness, because there are lots of days I don't feel happy, but it's that deep rooted joy in Christ. Joy is a fruit of the Spirit, and it's something that I think as we're following Christ and truly pursuing Him, praying, digging in the Scriptures, He'll give us that fruit of the Spirit, and joy is one of the fruits. One of my favorite bands, the Wren Collective group, band, whatever, has this quote. They say, seriousness is not a fruit of the Spirit, but joy is. And I love that, and just love, like, we get to model Christ in how we act and in our joy. And I love it when people ask that question, because it's a testimony to the Lord, not to me. So. Mm-hmm.
Amen. Yeah. Oh, how beautiful. I just want to hug you from the airwaves.
Oh.
Just a big squeeze. Oh, well, so we know you were adopted from Romania.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What was it like there growing up in a family of eight?
Yeah, crazy. So crazy. My mom was very good about structuring the household. We all pitched in and helped clean the house or helped with dinner, or it was all hands on deck, because there were so many people. And my dad is an architect and recently moved his office home. So it got even crazier, but it was just so fun. And I loved growing up in a big family. And it's so funny, because in the homeschool world, six kids is not a big family. I think we grew up with families that had 12 kids, which to me is wild. But to the rest of the world, six is a lot of kids. And you might have had similar experiences, but we'd be in the grocery store at 11 a.m. grocery shopping when it was not as crowded, and people would just stare and ask all these questions. Yes. And it's just so funny. It's so funny. But
I know. Perspective.
I really loved it. Yep. It's so true.
Yeah. Truly so perspective. True. Well, you talk about, your book is called Longing for Motherhood.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about these deep sorrows of seasons that you went through. Take us to age 18. When some things in your life began to shift in the direction that you probably had no idea it would ever go.
Yeah. So, and I won't get too down in the weeds on the details, but I was 18 years old, hadn't had my period, which is not normal. So I went to the doctor, and they said, oh, we'll schedule some tests. We're not sure this time, but there's a possibility it could be this. Mm-hmm. And all of the possibilities included not being able to have kids. So that was in August. The end of August, I packed up all my worldly goods and headed to college as a freshman. And tried not to dwell on the thought of what could be, which was the possibility of not being able to have kids. And I think those couple months, the rest of my tests were scheduled for the week of Thanksgiving, which is so ironic. But I think I tried to just push out of the back of my head, like, the possibility of what could be, and just dive into school as a freshman. And then I came home for Thanksgiving break and more doctor's appointments. And it was one day, one doctor's appointment that completely just changed my life, which sounds dramatic, but I think our fertility or lack of is such a core part of us that it really can change us when something like a doctor's appointment happens. But they told me that I was born without a womb, so I could never carry children. And I left that doctor's office truly forever changed and propelled into the darkest season I've ever experienced. Struggled with depression, panic attacks, just really in the pits. And I think anyone struggling with infertility or having gone through a miscarriage or whatnot can relate that it is, like I said, it hits so close to our core that it really can destroy us if we're not careful. So and 18 is quite a young age to find out something like that. And my circumstance was quite unique in the fact that I was single, and most people go through a season of infertility, barrenness, miscarriage, whatnot, as a unit, as a couple. And so I felt even more alone and entered some dark, dark days with the Lord. So,
Well, emotionally, you had to have been absolutely torn, because you write in your book, "There I was at 19 years old, the same age Anna was when she placed me for adoption, realizing that biologically I could never be a mother."
Mm-hmm.
How did that strike your heart?
I think the first response, so I grew up in a Christian home. My parents are both really strong believers. The first thing I thought was, what are you doing, Lord? Why is this happening? Why would you choose me for this? I had grew up in a large family. I volunteered and worked in the children's ministry department at church, and always assumed that being a wife and a mother would just come and come naturally and quickly and easily. And when that was taken away, I felt really upset and sorrowful and didn't understand, and was really struck with grief. And I think I wrote about this in the book, but I never came closer to walking away from my faith and walking away from anything having to do with the Lord. But when I found out over the next couple months, I thought, okay, I can either try to do this on my own, or I can wrestle with the Lord and see what the outcome is. I love that story in Genesis where Jacob wrestles with the Lord. And so I entered into a season of wrestling with the Lord, and by his grace, he kept me. And I think over the course of the next couple months, years, as I stood back and examined what our faith was, reading in the Gospels, the call to be a Christian is the call to pick up our cross and follow Christ. And for whatever reason, I may never know, on this side of eternity, barrenness and childlessness was my cross. And the more I tore apart scripture and studied, the more I came to realize that trials and suffering were, the Lord promises us those. It shouldn't surprise us that we encounter those, but deeper and more true than our suffering. He promises never to leave or forsake us. And so as I wrestled through that sorrow, I think for the first time in my life, actually decided to be a Christian and to follow Christ no matter what the cost. Long answer to a short question.
Oh, no. And yeah, it's your answer and it's your story. And I think that's what's so important, Chelsea, and why everybody's going to want to pick up their own copy of Longing for Motherhood, Holding On to Hope in the Midst of Childlessness. It is a hard story to talk about. Yeah. So first I want to say thank you for being brave. It's one thing to write because you don't have to face the person who's reading it.
Yeah.
You know, they take your story and they're going to use it however it feeds them. When the reader, though, does pick up your book, what is one of your hopes as they read each line in each chapter and it comes to life for them?
Such a good question. For them, for each person that reads this book, to know that they are not alone in this journey, I think. And I write about this a lot in the book, but childlessness, and again, when I say childlessness, that's kind of the umbrella and the spokes are barrenness, infertility, miscarriage, whatnot, can be one of the most silent, lonely struggles. For instance, when someone has cancer, while that's awful and that's terrible and no one should ever have to go through that, it's a visible trial and people know and people remember to ask how you're doing or to bring a meal over or whatnot. But when you miscarry a child, no one will ever know unless you tell them. And so I think one of my hopes is that this book will tell people and tell women that they're not alone in this trial. And there's so many infertility effects 1 in 10 couples, and miscarriages affect about the same number of couples, which is a huge number of people. And no one really, it's still such a taboo topic to talk about. And I don't want to force someone to talk about it if they don't want to, but I also want people to know that there are other people out there and that there is hope in the midst of this trial and that hope and grief can coincide. So that'll be my biggest hope for people reading this book, is for them to know that they're not alone and there's other people and that the Lord sees and knows them in their trial.
Mm. Well, I know in reading it, as a mom who has been blessed to actually birth 5 children, it was a two-way street that I took your book. One, I got to read your story. Actually, three-way street, I guess. If there is such a thing as a three-way street, but we can make it up today.
Let's make it.
So one-way street, obviously, is that, you know, I'm very blessed. Mm-hmm. And at the times that I am so flustered as a mom, because, I mean, I got to be real and raw, they make me mad. Yep. You know, I do want to hang them out on the clothesline once in a while by their toes and tell them a few things. But then I calm down, that moment passes, and all is well. So I felt very blessed. Then I felt the pain and the hurt
of the
what if I was faced with what you were faced, with not being able to carry a baby and not having that. And then the other side of, gosh, what have I done? Have I left somebody out that, you know, almost feeling the guilt, you know, to where... What can we do? Because when I was thinking about this, I added up your family and my family. We make more than a football team, which is awesome. I mean, well, we make a football team, but if we include the parents as coaches, okay. So just the kids, we got you as a football team.
With this
football team, right there, we've got someone who cannot bear children, their childlessness. Yeah. You know, and it's you. And I don't know, my children are slowly getting to that age. They're not all there yet. I have a senior in college as my oldest right now, so she graduates this year.
It's awesome.
You know, I pray that she will have that opportunity, but I don't know yet because she's not at that point, you know, in her life, or we haven't figured it out because, like your story, you found out before you were coupled. She has not found anything to our knowledge. Mm-hmm. So looking at that, what do you tell the woman like me, mm-hmm. who is healthy, who's raised children, but they almost feel guilty? How can we come beside ones like you who are struggling and hurting and in sorrow in a deep place?
That's such a good question, and I'm so glad you asked it. I think I'm going to answer it two ways. I think zooming out quite a bit, each one of us are going to face unmet desires and unfulfilled longings in life. Some women are never going to get married and they long for marriage, and we're both married. Some women long for children and they're never going to be a natural mother. Some women long for a new job or a better financial situation or insert whatever. We are all going to have unfulfilled longings and desires. And so I think in some ways we can relate, it's not the best word, but in some ways we can get it of, and yes, childlessness is a big unfulfilled desire, but in other ways, it's a part of living life that we're all going to face those disappointments and those heartaches. So I think being careful and saying like, not comparing, but understanding that deeper rooted, that at the core of it, it's an unfulfilled desire, and we all have those. So that's kind of zoomed out. I think zooming in a little bit, and I've felt this so many times, but and I'm guilty of this, the church doesn't really know how to respond to sadness, or when someone sits across the coffee table and says, my marriage is falling apart, or I lost a baby, or we've tried for 5 years and we can't. I think we don't know how to respond to something like that. And so we either want to fix it really quickly or run away from pain. And so I think whether you're a mom of 5 kids or a pastor or a friend or whatnot, I think something we can all do, and I'm putting myself in this boat, to learn, is to take the Bible seriously when it says to weep with those who weep. And you shouldn't feel guilty for having kids. That's such a sweet blessing. And I shouldn't feel guilty for being married. We can enjoy the good gifts. And I can rejoice with you that you have 5 kids. But we also need to take seriously the verse that says to weep with those that weep. And it makes me really uncomfortable to be in a position where I can't fix something. But I think those are the times that we can press into the Lord and trust that He's going to give us the grace and the wisdom to know what caring for someone in that difficult situation looks like. Mm. That's what I would say.
Oh, that's beautiful. And when you all pick up your own copy of Longing for Motherhood, Holding On to Hope in the Midst of Childlessness, you will get the opportunity to read deep down in there. You have, after the end of every chapter, you have a reflection and a discussion area.
Yeah.
I love that because it allows reader to, I think, really self-reflect and to go deeper within themselves as to dealing with what just came across through your story.
Mm-hmm.
So beautiful. And one that could almost use it as a study guide.
Yeah,
if you wanted a few girlfriends to come together, you know, or a few couples to come together.
Yes.
And also, though, in your book, because I want to make sure people know this, you have prayers of longing and hope at the back, along with love. Now, you have scriptures throughout the whole thing. But in the back, you have 30 scriptures to sustain you during this dark season and the childlessness. Yeah. And I love that.
Yay.
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
That you took the time to do that. You said your faith was shaken.
Mm-hmm.
When your faith is shaken, we have a flight or fight response. It's one or the other. That's what we do. And when we're in pain, our body tells us, our mind, it's just how God, you know, made us. And that's a good thing to have.
Yeah.
But it's also very detrimental when we need to move forward and we can shut God out. And so when that woman is in pain, she doesn't have to go search and look at her Bible that has how many thousands of verses
in
it and feeling lost because she already feels lost and alone. She can just go to the back of your book and grab a scripture and just meditate on that one scripture and hold tight to it.
Yeah. Powerful. These are some of the verses I have read and prayed and cried and journaled probably a thousand times. So I really hope that they do serve as a quick reference that someone can, when they're crying, go read, or when they're angry or whatnot, go read and meditate on. So
what's
I'm glad you like
favorites?
It. Oh, that's actually, let me flip it open. I think, and I don't even know if I included this. I don't know if I included it in
we
the
get
30
bonus
scriptures.
Then.
Hey, one of my favorites, sorry, I'm looking. One of my favorite scriptures, I did not include it. I did not. I included it throughout the book, but one of my favorite scriptures is Psalm 13, where David begins and he cries out, "How long, O Lord? How long will you forget me? How long will I suffer?" And I love that the Lord included that prayer of David's, because he is asking God, "How long are you going to leave me in this position? Like, how long am I going to feel forgotten?" And it is such a source of comfort to me and should be a comfort to any other believer, that the psalmist, that our saints before us felt those feelings of frustration or fear or sadness or longing, and that these, our emotions are not bad, but the psalms teach us where to take them and what to do with them, which is to pour them out. Sometimes very emotionally into the Father's heart. And so I love that psalm because I can picture David praying and almost being a little sassy with the Lord of like, how long are you going to leave me? Like, just kind of pressing into that. So I really appreciate that the Lord included honest prayers in scripture. So,
yeah, and I think that reminds us too that he wants us to be honest and real with
him. Yes.
He wants us to yell when we're mad at him.
Yeah.
And ask those tough questions. God says, "Bring it on, man. Bring it on. I'm here."
He's big enough.
You know, he can handle it all, but we just tend to retreat. Well, your faith was shaken. How did you come back to trust God and to begin to walk with him hand in hand?
It's such a good question. The Bible and prayer, and I'll dive deeper into that, but meditating on God's promises. It was so interesting because when I started sharing with a few friends that couldn't have children and didn't share kind of the details or the particulars, and so many people would say, "We don't know that. Just keep praying. Just keep hoping." And for my particular situation, I did know that that would never be in the picture, and some people don't know, they're struggling with infertility, but I came to realize that having children is not a promise of God I could hang my hat on, and trusting in a gift that God gives some people is not a promise we can cling to and claim before him. So I really stepped back and thought, okay, well, what do I know to be true? And what can I, like, what promises can I hold up to God and say, "You've said this, now do as you've said." And those promises are the promises that he'll never leave or forsake us, that his steadfast love will be with us forever, that we can have hope, and that we can have a community, and that we can have all the rich blessings of God himself. We're told that we have everything we need for life and godliness. And so just really rooting my heart in the promises and in a hope that is eternal and not worldly is interesting. I was writing my chapter on hope, and I think so, excuse me, so often our perception of hope is even distorted. And we can say, like, "I hope I get a good grade," or "I hope I get married one day," or "I hope this or that." And that can really, when we're going through a hard time trying to find hope, distract us. And we're like, "Well, I hope I get this." And real godly hope, I think it's helpful to substitute the word hope for no. I know that the Lord will be faithful. So we could say, I hope the Lord will be faithful, but I know the Lord will be faithful. And so finding hope in God's promises. And then this might sound probably not what your listeners are expecting, but God's sovereignty honestly gave me so much comfort, because I could rest in the fact that even though I didn't know why this was happening, that he did, and he is in control of all things, and that nothing, this trial took me by surprise, but it didn't take him by surprise, and that he, the God who never sleeps or slumbers, was in control and ordering everything. And it is still frustrating that we might not have answers on this side of eternity, but that we can trust the one who has the answers. So the short answer is getting to know God and his character is what has given me comfort and hope in the midst of one of the darkest trials.
Has it gotten easier?
Yes and no. it was 27. It was 8 years ago now. But, and so there's been a lot of healing. But I think writing the book felt like kind of scratching open a wound, and just kind of reliving some of the pain. And it's quite vulnerable. I'm not going to lie, it's very, very vulnerable. But this is the book I wish I'd had when I walked into the bookstore trying to find books, and there was nothing. And so if it helps one person, I will have done what I set out to do. So.
Well, you mentioned your diagnoses, and mm-hmm. I'm going to have you pronounce it. Short end is MRKH. So if you really want to know, we'll have that in the show notes for you. But basically, it means it's 100% guarantee that you will never carry children because you do not have a womb. You went through this really dark season in your life, and I'm mm-hmm. sure you have kind of peekaboo moments mm-hmm. where you kind of go back into those darker areas. And but you've probably come up with some strategies to pull yourself away. Someone who is in that season of sorrow right now, longing for motherhood, whether it's mm-hmm. because of a miscarriage, whether it's because they found out they are infertile, or maybe mm-hmm. their spouse is, and they're looking at infertility in a different direction. What would you tell that woman as to where you once were?
That's such a good question. I love that. That it does get easier, that the time really does help with those sorrows. And the other thing is to surround yourself with a good community, whether that's a church community, whether it's two or three friends, family members who will regularly check in and ask how you're doing. Those friends who will know when you're in Target and a pregnant mom walks by, so just reach over and touch your shoulder. Or when you get another pregnancy announcement in the mail or whatnot, just those core group of people who know you and know your heart and know how to care for you in your pain. So I suffering is hard. Suffering alone is, I can't imagine it. And I was so blessed to have friends and family who walked that road with me. So finding and having a good community is worth its weight in gold.
And if I would also add to that, mm-hmm. for those who are in search of someone, maybe they don't have their family to lean on, mm-hmm. go reach out to a church. Maybe a church still doesn't know what to do, mm-hmm. but I've yet to find any church that speaks of God and his truths and his promises to ever turn somebody away. So if you are that one that's sitting in that dark closet and that corner and going, I have no one, I literally have no one. I would say reach out to a church and just walk in to the sweet woman or man who's sitting there and say, I just need help, and let the tears fall, because I promise God already knows what you need, and he's already preparing the way.
I'll add to that. I went through a lot of counseling as well, so I think we're never meant to walk this road alone, and or this life alone, and there's no shame in seeking professional help as well. So I think some people can feel shame about that, but I did it. So
we all need a coach and a counselor in our life.
Yes. Yes.
we definitely need that. Mm-hmm. What did your season of sorrow though, Chelsea, teach you?
Oh my goodness. So how much time do you have?
Oh, we have all day.
So much. I think it made me so empathetic to people. I think it really softened my heart. I grew up, I was the good girl. I was very legalistic in my faith, and everything was black and white growing up. And this completely re-altered my perspective on a lot of life. And so really came to see the humanity of Christ in my sorrow, and came to learn the God who can sympathize with us in our sadness and in our sorrow. And Jesus wept, and he knew he's going to raise Lazarus, but he entered into the humanity of Mary and Martha and wept with them at his tomb. And something else I love, and I really took as a comfort and learned, is Jesus knew what it was like to face an unfulfilled desire. In the Garden of Gethsemane, right before he went to the cross, he said, "Lord, if there's any other way, please let this cup pass." And God said no, and God, the cross was how we got our salvation. But he asked the Lord for something, and God said no. So I think just learning that our God can sympathize with us and knows what it's like to cry and to be told no, or to be told wait, or whatnot. So I think just really getting to know, and I talked about God's sovereignty a minute ago, but getting to know that part of Jesus and seeing him interact with humanity really made me a more tender-hearted person. And so I'm grateful for that. I never would have chosen that, but it really has sharpened my faith and deepened my empathy, and it in a way I don't think anything else could have.
It's interesting how God begins to mold us through our sorrows and our pains and our tragedies, things that we don't see, but when we step back, we learn so much from it. So beautiful.
Yeah.
For the mother who is listening to this, and I say mom because you were the child who was given the news that you would not bear children. And Mom Patterson had her own cross to bear.
What
would you tell that mom whose daughter is going through this right now, and or maybe it's been a few years, and she feels like they've become distant? Or there's some brokenness there to heal. What would you tell that mom?
That's such a good question. I wrote about this, but my mom and I's relationship was a little bit tumultuous because, and I didn't even realize this till I reflected on it years later, but my parent, my mom, was the closest thing in my mind to God. And because I felt like God had failed me in my human sinful mother, we're all human, we're all sinful, she couldn't love me perfectly. And so I equated her failure to love me perfectly with God's failure. And so I lashed out. I said things I shouldn't have. And so I would tell that mother who's walking alongside a daughter or a granddaughter or sister or whatnot, not to give up, that the demons I was wrestling with were so much deeper than my relationship with her, and that she was the safest and closest person to unfortunately lash out to. And because I knew she wasn't going anywhere, I could feel a lot of feelings with her and express them to her. And there's so many times where I'd call her crying, and she would remind me of God's promises and remind me that she was never going anywhere and neither was God. And so I think it can be really difficult. And so I would say, don't give up on that person, and don't give up loving, even when it's harder than it should be.
Mm. And now your relationship with your mom?
Great. We are such good friends. Such good friends.
Yeah.
She is a mama bear to the core. Mama bear to the core.
And that's a good thing to have.
Yes, it's such a good thing.
Yeah, at times, I'm sure when you're in your teen years, not so much. Like, Mama, calm it down. We don't need to hear anymore.
Yeah.
Oh.
We've all been there.
Yeah, good memories. Well, how can, I'm obviously just meeting you, knowing and learning your story. But as someone meets someone, comes across them and their story of longing for motherhood, this childlessness that they're facing.
Yeah.
How can friends and family come beside you and actually support you in the journey? You know, because it's not like you mentioned grief very early on when we started chatting, and you said you went into this grieving, and grieving is a process.
Yes.
Because you were told that you can't have children yet. And some would say, well, you didn't lose one. What's the big deal? And I know I'm making kind of light of that.
No.
I think people really honestly think that, and they just push it under the bed, and they're like, why worry about it, man? I got bills to pay. I can't even pay my electric bill. And you're complaining about not having a child. Well, at least you don't have to pay for them.
Yeah.
You know, these thoughts that come through, and I know they happen.
Oh, yeah.
But
oh,
how can those family and friends come beside you and support a woman who, you know, is going through this longing for motherhood?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. And yes, those thoughts come. I think it's so easy to compare sufferings, to either elevate our suffering to the worst thing that's ever happened to any human ever, or to diminish someone else's suffering. So like you said, like, well, at least I don't have to feed five kids. You know, like, it's so easy to like compare sufferings. And again, this is where empathy comes in, to say that might not be a big deal to me, and I might not know how the heck to care for someone in that situation, but it's a big deal to them. And so seeking ways to love and comfort someone in their suffering. Something else that really, and maybe I'm just sensitive, but really got on my nerves when I first found out I couldn't have kids, was people would just slap a couple Bible verses on my problem, my suffering, and expect me to get over it. And when I wasn't quickly getting over it, they would be so confused and be like, well, trust in God's love, you're okay, like, you'll be fine. And I think, like you said, grief is a process. And so not immediately rushing to say, well, it's all going to be okay, like, we have the promise of heaven, like, it's all going to be okay. And so sitting with someone and realizing that grief can take a long, long time, and being willing to be in it for the long haul. Something else that I would caution people against is when I first started sharing, everyone would say, oh my goodness, well, you can just adopt kids. You shouldn't be sad. You can just adopt. And I didn't say anything, but it really hurt me, because I thought, well, yes, that is factually true, but I didn't have the room to grieve the death of a dream. And so I feel like I'm giving a lot more don'ts than do's, but we should be so careful in slapping cheap comfort onto someone's real sorrow. It can be so easy. Now, I'm sure I've done it with single friends, of like, well, at least you don't have to make dinner for two people or whatever. You know, it's so easy to just try to make someone feel better quickly. But sometimes it can be more damaging than helpful.
Mm. Yeah, we are very, I don't think people mean it, like you said, to come across.
Yeah, yeah, where, not at all.
Know, it's their heart is kind of there, but if we would stop long enough and just be in the moment, and you actually walk through and you give suggestions in your book, we're not going to highlight those all today because you're going to want to pick up your own copy of Longing for Motherhood, Holding On to Hope in the Midst of Childlessness. So not only do you want that, you know, because you want to pick that book up, so you've got some of those lists, but you also talk about myths in your book. And we're not going to cover those, but that's another thing that, especially for the one who's going through the process.
Yeah.
I think that is a really, really good one to, you know, hone in on, because your book, if you wanted to, you wouldn't have to start at the very beginning.
Nope.
You know, you could
the
jump
chapters
to,
are kind of individual. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I love that. And and having that reflection and discussion at the end, even as one who has been blessed with children, I still sat there and thought, okay, wait, let's answer a couple of these questions.
What did I
get from this? Because we all have a story to tell and we all can learn from the stories that are told.
You know, and such good wisdom.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, and we have to put it into practice. Now, the interesting thing about your story, which I love. Okay. So you're adopted. Romania, you come to the States, basically the States is all you know. You circle around and you end up working on Capitol Hill with child welfare policy. I mean, come on.
It's crazy. It's so, I know, it's so crazy. So, so crazy.
It's mind-blowing to me.
Yeah. Well, I've always had such a passion for adoption because I had a really positive experience, and it really is crazy how the Lord kind of brought me to getting to work on federal policy on children's issues. And my husband works on the Hill as well, but he does farm policy. And so it's been fun to get to work on those issues and talk and advocate. I've written quite a bit on adoption, and I care a lot about it. And my husband and I do plan on adopting one day, and looking forward to when that day comes. So,
well, you have to work on yourselves first because you just got married.
Yes, I know. We just got married. It's so, we're just still decorating our apartment.
Well, it's so cute. And I have to share this part of it because I do my research. And so I found a little article of what Michael wrote about your story and coming together. And I got to tell you, your stories and how he said that he then accepted you into his story, and I just so beautiful. And the whole process of how you met and the dating and So, you know, Michael is definitely a blessing. In fact, you write in your book, "My precious man is God's greatest gift to me on this side of heaven."
He is.
How has Michael walked beside you in this really difficult journey?
That's such a good question. And again, my situation's so unique in the fact that I knew before we got married, and most people don't know until after they get married. But we went through a season where I shared with Michael, and he wrestled. He went to where I went 8 years ago and wrestled and prayed and grieved. And so I observed this man who I was dating at the time, hoping to marry, but just saw him wrestle and pray and ultimately press into the Lord and all of that. And so it honestly was so cool to see. Not that I'm glad his faith was tested, but to know how someone was going to handle a really big trial before I committed I think some people get married and then they're faced with huge trials and they're not prepared for, or they've never seen someone experience it really tear apart a marriage. But he truly is, Michael is the kindest, most godly man I've ever met. And so the title of his piece is "I Loved Her More." And it was such an experience to see him wrestle and then come around to you, but your childlessness doesn't define you. And for him to understand that womanhood is so much greater than fertility, and for him to marry me knowing that we wouldn't have biological children, but that, and that's still sad. We've still cried together about that, but knowing that our lives are bigger than whether or not we were ever a wife or a husband or a mother or father or whatnot, that our calling is grander and bigger than that. And that while those are good roles to step into, that our womanhood is bigger than our fertility. Our calling is to glorify God. And we can do that in any season, in any role we step into. So, yeah.
What a beautiful story. Oh my goodness. I feel like I've used the word beautiful so many times in this, in our chat,
you.
But it really is. I mean, it's the way God sees beauty. And that's how I'm using this word beautiful, is that God gave life to you.
Mm-hmm.
And he took this sweet baby who no one knew. You didn't even know where your next meal would come from.
Yep.
Yet God was already planning for this sweet family. And now for him to have already designed a husband specific for you to love you and to cherish you. That's God. It's God's work.
I love getting to look back and see how he's ordained everything. And you can see his fingerprints over everything. And one of my favorite quotes, and I know I used it in the book, is by Charles Spurgeon. And it says, when you cannot see the hand of God, you can always trust his heart. But so many times God does allow us to look back and see his hand and see how he's carefully woven our stories together. And again, we will not have all the answers on this side of eternity, but we can look back and see how God placed me in a family. And then God has placed me in a new family with Michael, and how he does redeem all things to himself. And it is beautiful because it's not me, it's him.
It is. It's a heavenly fairy tale here on earth.
I love that. Yes.
It is.
I love that.
It is a heavenly fairy tale. Well, I know women, and even some men, I'm sure, are going to want to get in touch with you. They're going to want to find you and say, I've got some questions, or I was recently diagnosed. How did you handle this? Where can they connect with you, Chelsea?
Great question. My website is Chelsea, C-H-E-L-S-E-A, C as in cat, Patterson.com. And then Twitter at Chelsea, C-H-E-L-S-P-A-T, Chelsea Pat. I still haven't changed everything over to Soblick yet. So Chelsea C. Patterson and on Twitter as well.
Well, we will have all that information for you in the show notes, along with the link to pick up her brand new book, Longing for Motherhood, Holding On to Hope in the Midst of Childlessness. Chelsea, before I let you go, I have one last question for you, because we could talk forever.
Yes.
We may just have to have you back on.
I feel like I've been catching up with an old friend. It's been great.
It has been. Where's our coffee? We need more coffee. I just drink water. So, what are you drinking?
Coffee,
yeah, probably a specialty, right? Something special that you do on the hill, I'm sure. The series is called My Strength is My Story.
Mm-hmm.
What has your story gifted you?
That's so good. My story has gifted me a grander view of God that I wouldn't have any other way, and an empathy to be able to put my arm around another woman and say, me too. I get the pain you're going through. And again, circumstances can look different for how, but I get that longing for motherhood. And it has given me an opportunity to say, I get it. And to love someone in that vulnerable, sorrowful journey.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
I just have to throw that word in again. It's beautiful. It is what it is.
The word of the day.
It is the word of the day. And you, my friend and sister in Christ, you are a beauty. And I know God is going to use your story miraculously. He's going to use it to touch lives that you may not even hear from. And so thank you for being so vulnerable, for opening up your heart and opening up your life to allow us to come in and to have that picture. It's very scary to share your story.
Yes, it is.
Very scary. But you do it in such a beautiful, sweet, just down to heaven way.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
God does have his fingerprints all over you.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much for having me on. It truly has been such a joy, and I hope we get to meet in real life someday soon.
I hope so too.
Great.
Many blessings, Chelsea.
Great. You too. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Feeling inspired, ready to train for life, and love your journey? Visit createyournow.com for more incredible resources to help you along the way. We'll see you next time on Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. And remember, always be sure you consult your physician before beginning any health and fitness plan.